You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In Donald Margulies' play Time Stands Still, two war correspondents are forced to reevaluate their careers and their personal lives when photographer Sarah Goodwin is seriously injured in Iraq. It was first staged last winter at the Manhattan Theater Club in a limited, critically acclaimed run, and now it's back on Broadway at the Court Theater. Joining me now are two of its stars, Laura Linney, who plays Sarah, and Brian D'Arcy James, who plays James Dodd, her boyfriend. Very pleased to welcome them to our show now. Hello.
Thank you.
Hello.
Brian, the production at the Manhattan Theater Club closed in March. When did you go back into rehearsals before you started performances at the Court Theater?
When did we go back? We went back probably in end of September. Is that right?
It's a blur.
Yeah.
But is it just easy? Do you just go back and suddenly everything comes back to you? Or do you have to kind of relearn everything?
You do have to blow off the dust a little bit. But since we had done it for such a significant amount of time, and really kind of cut a groove in terms of what the play was and what the performances were, it wasn't hard to come back and kind of revisit that.
It was a fascinating process. I've never had the opportunity to do a show as fully as we did it the first time, go away, work on something else, come back 4 or 5 months later, and then put it back up. And we also had we had one cast change. Christina Ricci came in and took over for Alicia Silverstone. But I found that I really had to, because my mind was much was way ahead of my body, and I had to sort of gently wake it back up. I couldn't get ahead of myself while we were in rehearsal, and that was it required a little patience for my body and my voice to sort of catch up to what my mind knew it had to do.
What about a cast change? Because even though the character's saying the same lines and pretty much standing for the same things, it's a different person, different rhythms.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Did you have to adjust, or was it easy because Eric Bogosian was also in the original production, so it was three against one?
It was easy in the sense that, you know, when you're dealing with a new stimulus, it's you know, if you're even halfway listening or there, you're going to be affected by that new voice or that new attack. And I found it to be very helpful and liberating to find this new, you know, this new energy, this new way of looking at things coming at you. And it shifted things a little bit, but on the whole, it was the same.
Well, I've spoken to some actors who say that they get upset if it's the same every night, and others who say they get upset if it isn't the same every night. With a cast like this, where you have been pretty much together for so long, does it kind of feel like it's the same every night? Laura, can you just assume that Brian is going to deliver that line the same way he did last night?
No, but I know he will deliver it with enormous truth and great connection. And I think about that question a lot, actually, because there are times where it feels very different to me, but I know that it's not. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, within a 4-degree range of change, to me it might feel like 20 degrees, but it's really what an audience will see is only 4. So it feels alive to me, and it does feel at times where certain colors are a little stronger, a little more dominant than others.
And how important is the audience to all of that? Because they're responding differently every night, aren't they?
Sometimes. It's not as different as you would think. Sometimes there's a quieter house. And I notice in the past week we've had a few quiet houses. And I've actually started to enjoy that a little bit. At first it annoyed me because I was like, come wake up, folks. But now we've sort of gone into a more fluid groove when there is an audience that is a little quieter, and we just sort of race ahead of them a little bit and get them to come with us. And it's a different kind of concentration that you feel from the house. There's nothing better for me or more enjoyable than the sound of people listening. The silence of listening is a really satisfying, and there's different degrees of that with different houses.
Both of you are playing people who've been damaged by their experiences in Iraq. Sarah comes across as very tough. How is she handling her injuries when she arrives home from a hospital in Germany?
Well, I don't think she's too happy about it. It's, you know, her life was just in an instant completely changed. And her life was changing anyway over there with a new relationship. And I think she's so completely out of control at that point. She's back at home where she never thought she would be. She's back with her her best friend and lover of 8 years, who she, I don't think, thought she was going to be with anymore.
Kind of like a forced interruption.
Yes, yes. And also to physically not be able to do what, you know, a fiercely independent person wants to do is, yeah, she's not comfortable in any way.
Sarah's scars are visible, but James's aren't. He's recovering from an emotional breakdown that required him to leave Iraq shortly before Sarah was injured. I'm assuming it was something equivalent to PTSD.
It's not labeled as such in the play, but I've decided that's what it is, and have done a little bit of, you know, research into what that means. I could never understand completely what it means to kind of go to a war zone and experience the things that these war correspondents see and consume and digest. So he does suffer his own emotional kind of redefinition in a way. They're both trying to redefine themselves in light of what they've experienced.
What they've been forced into also.
What they've been forced into.
He feels guilty also that he wasn't there when Sarah was injured. But aren't there a lot of guilt feelings expressed by both of them? Maybe James more than Sarah, but they both seem to take many of the world's problems on as their personal responsibilities. There's no way you cannot feel guilty when the world is when you've just come out of a chaotic situation and you weren't able to change it.
Yeah, one thing that I learned, and I've talked about this before, that I find is very striking, is that there's a program at Columbia University called the DART Center for Journalism, Trauma and Journalism. And I learned something there that I thought was a really interesting key, which is that sometimes when people see things that are completely horrific and terrible, and their job is to report that, and then that reportage does not happen by because of editorial decisions or whatnot, the fact that it's not getting out there is sometimes more damaging psychologically than actually having consumed these horrific images. So I think that says a lot about the personal responsibility these people have to either affect change or at least simply tell the truth of what's going on out there.
But there they are. As far as they're concerned, what they are witnessing, what they're recording is the most important thing in the world. Then it comes back here. It may or may not make it into the magazine or the newspaper. But even if it does, it's just part of, you know, oh, there are some photographs of another bombing in Baghdad or in Pakistan.
Well, it can turn into entertainment for people.
But these characters do feel that what they're doing is incredibly important, mm-hmm. and justifies putting their lives on the line.
Mm-hmm. And it's their entire life. Everything about both of these characters up to this point is defined by their work.
And therein lies the crux of the drama, at least from my point of view, is that there's a paradigm shift for Jamie in that he is, for better or for worse, he is the walls are crumbling down in terms of his beliefs and his philosophies and his idealism about what he does. And he is forced to kind of make a decision about how he wants to, you know, reestablish himself as a person who's living in a domestic life as opposed to rushing back into the fray, which is what Sarah does.
I was afraid to call you Jamie in the play. It's made clear that only your best friends call you Jamie.
Yeah.
That's true. My guests are Brian D'Arcy James and Laura Linney, who are starring in Time Stand Still.
It's Brian D'Arcy Jamie.
Along with Eric Bogosian and Christina Ricci. It's at the Court Theater on West 48th Street near 6th Avenue. And we do have some kind of a thing on our website, which will tell people how they can get tickets if they want them. So what we have is a situation where Sarah has come back, forced to come back because she's been injured. James has come back because he's had this emotional breakdown, but he doesn't want to go back. He wants to live a normal life. And Sarah's character, her whole life is what she does. There is another aspect here. Sarah's character is a lot more famous than James's. She is the star of this relationship, and it's always difficult when there's some kind of inequity mm-hmm. in a couple, in a couple's careers, especially if they're working at something very similar. So
it's true. I think that's what's great about the play is that, while these people do something that maybe most people can't completely fathom in terms of what they experience on a day-to-day basis in a war zone. Universally, it's true that, you know, people who are in a relationship have to figure out the dynamics of whatever it is that they're dealing with.
And your character has to handle the fact that he's less successful than she is. He could try to ignore it, but it's there.
It's true, and that comes up in the play as well. It becomes a sticking point, a breaking point even, I would say. And it's probably something that's not necessarily talked about between the two of them, but it is something that's just understood and accepted until it can't be accepted on his part.
Is this something that gets discussed in rehearsals? Or how much of you have this wonderful script. Donald Margulies is really a very fine playwright. How much do you just simply, as a Shakespearean actor would say, trust the words and not bother doing a lot more to try to understand your character?
I think there's both, and things reveal themselves to you over time, which is the great thing about the theater, is that it gives you the opportunity for a deeper connection, a deeper understanding. A play reveals itself to you. You're not going to understand a play in rehearsal the way you understand it opening night, or the way you understand it 3 months in, or the way you understand it, like us now, doing a second run.
So should everybody just wait until the play is about to close before they go?
It's certainly a different experience. You know, and that's the great joy for me about doing theater, is that is how it grows and deepens, and, you know, that's what time does to something inherently. But as far as subtle questions of psychology and dynamic, and sometimes you talk about those things and then other times you don't have to. Other times there's just a sort of an understanding. And like you mentioned, the play does a lot of the work for you, and it's important to get out of the way and allow the play to do that work for you sometimes. So,
well, it's also directed by Daniel Sullivan, one of those directors that actors just swear by. So what does he do to help you find these characters?
He's meticulous about just basically boiling it down to what is essentially true. If there's something that's false about it or doesn't make sense, it's just a question of eliminating that. It sounds simple, but I think that's really the baseline, is that, you know, there's not a lot of you know, fireworks about it. It's just brass tacks. It's just getting down to taking each moment and just really whittling it down to what is essentially true and how it connects to the next thing in a very practical, truthful way.
I mentioned Sarah Scars earlier. Does a costume and makeup and, in this case, a leg brace help get you into a character?
Oh, sure. It has an enormous amount to do with everything that she's going through throughout the entire play, actually. Those scars never leave. And I when we first went into rehearsal, there was a conversation. They wanted the brace to be much smaller. They wanted it to be a boot just for an ankle thing. And I really fought for the big, larger piece, not just for it to be showy, but the fact that that leg had been shattered.
On the other hand, it made it a lot harder for you, I'm sure, to just get around.
It's not been as difficult as people think, fortunately. You know, the physical demands of the show are certainly there, but they're not. It's not as rough. It's sort of fun to drag that thing around.
It's interesting. There are moments in the play when I'm pretty aware, I think, of how Laura is feeling about what she's having to deal with physically. But there are moments when I think, oh, did that just really hurt her leg? I don't know if it's just a product of me just kind of focusing on this.
But you're thinking about, you said Laura, not Sarah.
Well, yeah, I'm wondering if the actor is actually hurt herself by doing, you know, there's a moment in the play when she really hurts herself. And you know,
and sometimes I do. Really, I mean, I'm covered in bruises. There's no question about that. But it's an added element that's certainly there.
We'll take a little break and come back with more with Laura Linney and Brian D'Arcy James, starring in Time Stands Still at the Court Theater, 138 West 48th Street. For ticket information, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. We're back with Laura Linney and Brian D'Arcy James, two of the stars of Time Stands Still, the the Court Theater at 138 West 48th Street. Actually, on stage pretty much all the time. Your co-stars, Eric Bogosian and Christina Ricci, come in for scenes, but you're there.
It's
you're
just there us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've always wondered about that, the difference between being able to go off for a little while and staying on the stage the whole time. I know when every once in a while there's a tape segment on our show, and I always feel my energy – I lose a little bit of energy, and then I have to get it back up. When you go off stage and other people are doing stuff for a while, do you – lose a bit of that energy?
Yeah.
You have to.
Oh, you do.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's preferable to kind of just keep plowing through, I think. It reminds me actually of Tom Hanks was interviewed when he was doing Castaway, and someone said, "Why, was that difficult for you to be on that island all by yourself and doing all that by yourself?" He said, "Are you kidding? I'm an actor. There was nobody else out there but me. It was incredible."
Of course, he had a full crew.
Well, that's true. But just in terms of your responsibility, I think if you can kind of jump on the train and stay on it, it's always better.
You have a better opportunity for a pure concentration for a longer period of time, as opposed to jumping off and jumping back in. And the more relaxed you can get on stage, the deeper the work will be. So that's what we sort of strive for, is reaching that state of relaxation on stage so that things can then reveal themselves.
So you get antsy during intermission.
Actually, I'm busy during intermission. I don't have a break at intermission. I have a costume change. I have a makeup change. Hanging up the brace. So from the minute I get to the theater at 6:30 to when the show comes down, I'm pretty busy.
It would be easy to play Sarah as a kind of hardened war junkie, but there's a lot of emotional depth in this character and a lot of complexity. And I always wonder, you know, how much of that is that we're seeing Laura Linney, who's just a great actress, doing this part, and how much of it is, I think I asked this question before, but how much of it is Donald Margulies?
A lot of it is Donald Margulies. Some of it is me. A lot of it is Brian. Mm-hmm. I mean, Brian's an enormous part of my work. What I do is all based on him, really, mm-hmm. a lot of it. You know, so he's a huge part of what I do. I don't even know. I think we were so in it, I don't even know anymore, like what's what and where one thing ends and where another begins. And
it is a blessing and a curse to not know that, because it can drain you. I guess that's the curse of it, in a way that makes you feel like this is, here we go again. We're kind of going down the rabbit hole. But on the other hand, it is a bit of a melding of, I'll speak for myself, of your own personal psychology and also that of the character, and kind of a marriage of those two things. So, you know, while it is, you know, you can have a great play, but if you don't have, you know, someone like Laura or Eric or Christina, you know, playing the characters, it's, you know, it's like a tree falling in the woods.
This is your second Donald Margulies play, isn't it?
It is. Laura? It is.
Sight Unseen.
It is.
And you've been in a lot of Chekhov. There are certain playwrights who you seem to gravitate toward. Is it easier when you're doing a second or a third play by the same playwright?
It is in some ways, because you can certainly trust. I certainly trust what Donald writes completely, and he has a fantastic theatrical mind. And I know that what I love about his work is that it's layer upon layer upon layer upon layer, and you have to earn those layers. They're not – you can't just play it. You really have to earn it. And it's sort of like a Chinese puzzle. You get to a certain point, and you've hit something, and you figure something out, and then it will unlock, and something else will show up, and then you have to do that. So for an actor, it's a constant – you're constantly engaged. You can never lay back on his work. So it's exciting that way.
We've mentioned the other two characters. Their editor, Richard, played by Eric Bogosian, has just started dating a much younger woman, Mandy, played by Christina Ricci. Your character, Sarah and James, react to her as though she's some kind of airhead ditz, an indulgence of an older man because she's much younger. But she obviously plays an important role in helping define the themes of this play.
Absolutely. She's an enormous, you know, she instigates a lot of Sarah's change, actually, I think. Absolutely. And mm-hmm. and Jamie's.
In different directions.
Whether he knows it or not.
Whether he knows it or not. But, you know, there's the thing that I love about this play also is there's an unspoken underlying theme about gender in this play, which I find fascinating and really pushes the emotional boundaries of what's happening, what's going on. And it's Mandy who is the one who starts that, who, you know, who unleashes that.
Because she actually, some people might say that she represents the anti-feminist position and your character represents the feminist position. Well, she's arguing for traditional family, having babies, and your character is saying, you know, I have a talent, children. I think that Sarah would have made a lousy mother.
I don't know if she'd be a great mother or not. I think more than women's liberation or the politics of that kind of gender issue, I think it's more about vocation. It's more about where someone feels they belong, where they feel they can do the most good, where they're the most comfortable. I don't think Sarah is comfortable anywhere else except when she has a camera in her hand in an area of conflict. I think Mandy grows into herself with a connection to life, to nurturing life, to nourishing life, to giving life. So I think it's really more about vocation and the power of vocation and how that changes a life than the more standard political views of femininity.
Well, do you think, Brian, that if James were more famous, that he'd be more tempted to go back into the war zone?
Perhaps, but I think what this play is really about is not only vocation, but also how two people in love can find the balance of what it is they want from each other and a relationship for a lifetime, whether that's kids or domesticity, in balance with, in this case, a very passionate vocation to go into the fray, into conflict. So while he may be tempted to want to go back out with more of with more padding with his celebrity or his success, I think it ultimately comes down to the relationship. That trumps, for me, that trumps the idea of what they do, because without that, you don't really have a play. It's about two people wanting or needing or trying to find a way to come together.
And then you also have the layer and the issue of ego. You have vocation that then is fed, or is it fed by ego? Do you need ego for success, or do you need lack of ego for success? You know, so they're all of those issues as well.
So what do you think? Do we need ego or lack of ego?
I think at times you need one, at times you need the other. I don't know.
Laura Linney and Brian Darcy James are my guests. They're starring in Time Stand Still at the Court Theater on West 48th Street. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The whole play takes place in their apartment in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. But given their jobs, they've really spent very little time together there.
No time. Yeah,
this is their stopover when they come to New York. It might as well be a hotel room.
That's right. That's right. We joke about the things that are some of the set pieces that are on there because, you know, I think we decided at one point that they had a competition about just finding the craziest thing at airports.
Yeah, the crappiest gifts you could get and just lining them up on the counter. Say we got this from Thailand, got this from Congo.
The title of the play comes from Sarah's description of what happens when she looks through her viewfinder to take a picture. Is her job where she feels most at home?
Absolutely. Oh, I think so. Yeah.
But it's also a way for her to control what she's saying because she's in these incredibly chaotic situations.
And it's also and she's also an artist. You know, not only is she a photojournalist, but there's a sense that she's also an artist in there and that she's, you know, I thought a lot about what is it that she brings to her photography, what kind of photography it is, what does she tend to be, what do her instincts take her to, what does she do with the camera?
Mandy asks a question of both of them that we've often heard, especially during the Vietnam War when people were setting themselves on fire. Did the photographer, did the reporter put the fire out or take the picture and write the report? And this has been a major ethical moral dilemma for people who cover these kinds of events.
Yeah.
And we Mandy takes a very different position. Your characters say, well, if we don't record them, then the world won't know they're happening.
That's right.
And she's saying, well, you're letting this person die.
Yeah. There's a line in a book by a guy named Brian Mueller called All Things Must Fight to Live. And he says, if you don't file it, it never happened. And I kind of have kind of taken that philosophy for Jamie as well, which gets him into trouble in the sense that he can't see the other point of view, which is that in this day and age when, you know, how we receive our media, how we receive our news is so saturated with all kinds of different ways, whether it's internet, the decline of newspaper and you know outlets that are providing all kinds of different ways to see news, and particularly war news, war journalism. You know, people get strung out on it, or they don't get strung out. Maybe the reporters do, but the people who are consuming it get numb to it. So, you know, she argues, look, what's wrong with me if I just turn the page and want to look at a picture of a person holding some shoes? That's, you know, I'd rather spend my time kind of balancing it with that. But I don't know where I'm going with this answer. But
so I'm going to change the subject.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
In recent years, you've done two musicals, Next to Normal and Shrek.
This is a segue.
You've been in several plays, including Port Authority, which was just one of the more extraordinary theater experiences for me. Do you enjoy going from musicals to dramas and back again?
I do. Especially, you know, the difference from going from Shrek to this couldn't be any different or wider.
Well, she got to wear all of the heavy makeup in this play, and you to wear you were green in Shrek.
It gives him great pleasure that I have to put
passing
that stuff
the torch to her. I always say, "See you later. I'm leaving," and she's peeling that stuff off of her face. But yes, I do. I think that for me, I love doing musicals. I love to sing. I love telling stories that way. And there's nothing better, I think, than finding a musical that can you know, communicate a story really well. But I also really love not having to rely on that in terms of storytelling. And being in this particular play is just a godsend. I mean, I keep waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder and say, "No, we meant Brian Dennehy." And I don't know how this happened, but maybe you could leave now. I feel really lucky to be in this.
Well, you're in the Court Theater, which I can't imagine a musical there because it's so intimate. And I would assume that that's really a godsend for actors who are used to working in a more natural way, like television films that you also have done, Laura. You don't have to shout to reach way back in the top balcony. No, because
it's a beautiful, intimate house, absolutely. And you learn where you sort of get a feel of vocally where you have to go. But you do have to reach up to that upper balcony. I mean, it's not the level that you have on film and television in any way.
Do you ever
take
a break?
It's still theatrical. Do I ever take a break?
Because after you were in this, you then – didn't you film The Big C?
I did.
And that had to be intense.
It was. It was great fun and a brand new experience for me to do a regular series of that nature. And so I learned an awful lot, and it was, you know, required a whole other set of thought process and discipline and all of that. And then I got to come back to this. So I do tend to I'm a bit of a worker bee that way.
Well, Kathy and the Big C, by the way, that's a big success. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I understand you're also the executive producer of the series.
I'm one of them, yes.
Are both Kathy and Sarah similar in that they insist on dealing with life and death issues on their own terms?
I guess so. They're so different. They're so different. And I often think, like, if they met each other, like, I think Sarah would just hate her. I think she would just have no time for her whatsoever. I think Kathy would be just completely intimidated and sort of admire what she did and her courage. But I don't think they're very, very different. They have very different qualities.
So is this an open-ended run?
I hope so. I mean, I hope that this play goes on for a long, long time. And the thing that was so encouraging to see when Christina came in, and the mark of a really good play, particularly a new play, is when a cast, when a play will support a cast change easily and beautifully, and you can see that the play is much bigger than anyone who's in it. And I really believe that this play should have a very long life, even when, hopefully, when we, you know, have to move on to other things, that it will, you know, welcome another cast and it will work just as beautifully, if not more so.
And then you'll go back to doing the television show.
I will.
And you, Brian?
Nothing planned now. Just waiting, kind of taking my time and enjoying this run, and maybe just hitting the pause button a little bit after this is over.
Because it is a problem, I'm sure, when you're in a play that has an open run. Opera singers know where they're going to be 4 years from now on a Thursday night in June, but you don't know. This play could close in 2 months. It can close in 6 months. At a certain point, you're going to have to decide whether you want to stay with it any longer. Is it usually because you're getting bored that you leave, or is it just simply that other jobs have come along that you got to take care of?
Well, we're contracted through, so we have a responsibility to stay through a certain amount of time, and then once that date hits, there's the ability to renegotiate, to stay in, or if it's understood that there's work on the other side, that you then move on.
Well, I hope you stay a long time. The play is really wonderful. And my great thanks to both of you for being on our show today. Laura Linney, Brian D'Arcy James, starring in Time Stands Still, along with Eric Bogosian and Christina Ritchie. It's at the Court Theater, 138 West 48th Street. For tickets, you can call 212-239-6200, or you can go to our show page at WNYC.org for all the information you may need. Thanks again.
Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.